Hey, Danger Dan Jurz here with a quick announcement. Our next interstitial bonus content will be Daniel's Power Rangers mini campaign, and it will be the final one before the start of Season 2 officially begins. It's a soft Season 1 epilogue slash side story that will be releasing exclusively on Patreon, with its first episode dropping Wednesday, May 27th. Stick around after the episode to hear a sneak preview. More details about Season 2 will be coming soon, so keep an ear out and enjoy the episode. Hello and welcome to Table Talk, a show where I chat with other creators in the TTRPG space about how they run their tables. I'm Danger Dan Jurz, the GM and host of D&D Dark, and joining us today is an actor, playwright, and actual play performer who has been involved with multiple streaming groups and was recently nominated for the 2025 Crit Awards as Best Player in a Chaosium Game, Julia LaBouche. Hello.
Hi.
To get us started, can you tell us a little bit about who you are, what your history in the TTRPG community is, and of course, about your Crit Awards nomination?
Yeah, hi. So I'm Julia. Thank you for having me. I've been doing APs since 2023. It was like my New Year's resolution to get into it. I started on Nerds with Dice. I just was like, back before Twitter totally sucked, I would just like find calls on Twitter, like Google Forms, and I just got lucky and got picked for that one. The channel I've worked with the most consistently is Streaming Rainbow, which is where Essa Sophia, the show that I'm nominated for, happened. And that was, Crit Awards was something that wasn't really on my radar at all. Streaming Rainbow put out a bunch of like for your consideration posts for their various shows. And they actually like listed me as someone who they recommended nominating, which was super cool. And I like really wasn't expecting anything to come of it. So it's very crazy that we're here. But yeah, I mostly do theater in New York, but I've loved RPGs since I was in middle school, so I do them whenever I can.
That's awesome, and I completely relate on the Crit Awards thing. For last year, for the 2024 Crit Awards, with like a week left to go in the submission window for the for your consideration portion of it, I was made aware that the Crit Awards was even a thing that existed in the first place, and just on a lark submitted our show in a couple of different categories, and we were surprised to get nominated for Best One-Shot for that. So that was a lot of fun. That was a really great, fun opportunity, and it's been an awesome way to meet other people within the community. It's a really great program for highlighting good performers and content within the space.
Yeah, it's such a cool community.
So for the show that you were specifically nominated for, SS Sophia, can you tell us a little bit about that show? And then for any listeners who might be unfamiliar with Call of Cthulhu, I imagine most of ours are probably at least somewhat familiar because we did a one-shot in the system. But for anyone who isn't, can you explain the basics of that system and the basics of that show?
Yeah, so Call of Cthulhu is an investigative horror game. It's focused less on combat and more on like solving puzzles and mysteries and whatnot and getting the shit scared out of you. and SS Sophia specifically was kind of the start of now like kind of an extended historical fiction universe that David, our keeper, and Lux, one of the other players, who is now also going to be GMing his own Streaming Rainbow show in this universe, they both kind of started it. And it takes place on a commercial liner in 1922, the SS Sophia, which claims that it will succeed where the Titanic failed. Yay, hubris. And our five explorers are on this ship ready to go back to England from Hong Kong. And things very quickly go horribly wrong, particularly for my character. And yeah, it's one of the coolest things I've ever done, I think.
That's awesome. Can you dive into your character in particular a little bit?
Yes. So Ainsley, my sweet, sweet boy, for years was a servant to this man, Alexander Montague, this like very rich, stereotypical British owner of a mining company. I say stereotypical with love because I invented him. David makes him a much cooler, not stereotypical person, but he's an asshole. He's a capitalist. Sorry if you can hear New York City behind me.
There's only so much you can do about New York City.
Yeah.
But anyway, please continue.
Alexander Montague recently lost his eldest son, Christian, under mysterious circumstances, right around the same time that Ainsley lost his mother. And in the confusion of that, it was revealed that Ainsley is actually the bastard son of Alexander Montague. So he is now the heir to the Montague fortune. So he's been pulled literally rags to riches and is very out of place, has no idea what's going on, doesn't want to be here, but also does really want his dad's affection. So not having a good time.
That's a very fun jumping off point. And I can see so many great story hooks to play with that setup.
Yeah, we actually, like, episode one starts with Ainsley having a panic attack because his stepmom yelled at him in our session zero.
Ah, so you can only go down from there.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
So in your personal experience with the Call of Cthulhu system, is that a system that you are particularly fond of? I noticed through, like, your history of your different streams that that game tends to come up a lot. Is that the system you're most familiar with, or are there other systems that are more your wheelhouse?
I'm definitely more familiar with it now than I was. I have dyscalculia, which is math dyslexia. So I was very intimidated by it at first, because the way it works is, like, you have these scores for your stats and you're rolling percentile dice and you're trying to roll under your scores. The character creation process for Call of Cthulhu is, like, insane. There's so many numbers.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah, so David really had to, like, walk me through it step by step. We've now done a sort of sequel series of SS Sophia called Mythos of War that just recently finished wrapping up, where I play a completely different character. It takes place 20 years after the fact. But yeah, every time I've had to make a Call of Cthulhu character, it's been a very long, arduous process where I'm just like, wait, what's going on? Someone please do this for me. But as for the game itself, I do feel comfortable with it now. The game that I am the most familiar with is D&D 5e. You know, that was my first one. I feel like it was a lot of people's first ones. Mm-hmm. People's first one. I talk for a living, Jesus. So I love D&D. I've played a little Vampire the Masquerade. I've watched more than I've played, but I do have a pretty decent grasp on how that works, too. Most of my favorite games are, like, indie one-page RPGs that are much more storytelling-based and, like, mm-hmm. you're rolling maybe, like, 2d6s at a time. I have a lot of fun with those because I get to get really deep with character creation stuff.
Yeah, I can understand that completely.
Yeah.
And I relate to you 100%. I personally feel like, with the limited experience that I've had with Call of Cthulhu, that character creation is far and away the hardest part of the system.
Yeah.
When we did our one shot, I was merciful on the cast by pre-generating the characters for them. I found a website that helped me fill in formulaically how to build the characters bit by bit.
Yeah.
And I leaned on that immensely.
100%. Yeah. In terms of, like, the flavor of, like, backstory character creation, I love Call of Cthulhu for that because it's so fun to just make a fucked up little guy. But yeah.
Yeah. It, at least from my experience, it feels like it's a very front-loaded system where it's very difficult to write a story for it and it's very difficult to build a character for it.
Yes.
But once you have the story in place and once you have the character sheet, there's a lot less decision-making that you would have to do compared to something like 5e. A lot less interpretation. A thing that I loved as a GM was I never had to come up with any sort of difficulty threshold for any given check because the character sheets do that for you.
Yes. Ainsley in particular was a character who was very bad at everything. which, if you watch the show, I think the first episode, I maybe succeed at, like, two or three rolls.
That sounds about right. But, you know, the propensity for failure, I think, is really great fodder for character drama.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So what has been, inclusive of SS Sophia, what has been your overall experience in streaming actual plays? As you've hopped around different systems, as you've worked with different groups, what have you learned from the different systems and from the different people that you've played in, and what overall has that been like for you?
So the channel I've played with the most is Streaming Rainbow, and I've built up the most community there. And yeah, I don't know. Like, I think my main takeaway of when I work with people who maybe I don't know as well, my main thing is you don't have time to be shy, which is a thing that like I've now brought with me in my real life with theater stuff too, where it's like you're doing vulnerable stuff together, but it's like the people are actually physically there. Because I, with a lot of the shows I watch, the main thing that makes me stop watching is like, we're however many minutes in and nothing has happened yet. And these characters are just like sitting there avoiding each other or like still having just like very basic small talk with each other. So my main thing is just like really trying to get into it as soon as possible. With horror games, there's a little bit more of like when shit starts getting scary, kind of like,
yeah.
I do still like playing into the hesitation of like, I'm a normal person and I just found a dead body. Oh no. But like, I've learned to not linger on being realistic, I guess.
Absolutely. That is fantastic advice. And I'm a little biased in how much I like that advice because I'm a very impatient both player and GM.
Yeah.
But like you mentioned, depending on the genre, if the system lends itself towards being more of a slow burn story, mm-hmm. there is something to be said about that. But
yeah.
I agree 100%. I shut off very, very quickly when I'm listening to any sort of actual play that doesn't have momentum behind it.
Yeah. Like, if you're not getting into it with the plot, I at least want to get into it with, like, juicy character stuff.
Absolutely. There has to be something for me to sink my teeth into.
Yeah.
So, I know that you brought up how that kind of hesitancy to be hesitant has helped you out on stage. Can you unpack that a little bit more? And is there anything from your theater experience that has helped you that you bring into TTRPGs with you?
Yeah, they've actually influenced each other way more than I thought they were going to. If you watch any of my stuff, like everyone can tell I'm a dramatic bitch. Like I get very internal. Episode 3 of Essa Sophia, I'm literally like crying on camera. But yeah, there's a thing in acting. There was this famous acting teacher named Uta Hagen, who has these like questions that you're always supposed to ask yourself as a character for whatever given scene you're in, which is like asking you to get really internal about like who you are and where you are and what just happened and like what are you experiencing right now and like what are the different senses you're feeling and what is influencing what. And I like a lot of like indie RPGs, stuff like we played Wickedness on Streaming Rainbow, or I'm a big fan of For the Queen by Alex Roberts, I want to say the person's name is, which kind of has a similar question system. But even when I'm not playing games that like involve questions in the setup or the character creation, I do find myself returning to that stuff a lot. Like if a GM is describing something to me, I really try to physicalize it as best I can. Extremely mild spoilers for Essa Sophia, but there's a moment where Ainsley gets smacked across the face and you can see that I actually like put my hand to my cheek to try and like feel that. A way that it's like influenced the other way around is I take stage combat classes. That's something I started doing early in 2024, and that has really helped me play characters in combat scenarios.
Interesting.
Yeah, I'm in a Star Wars 5e home game with some friends of mine, and I'm playing a monk. And when we first started that campaign and I would like describe things I do in combat, I would just be like, yeah, I punch him, because I've never been in a physical fight in my life. And it wasn't until after I started taking stage combat and I was like learning more about how certain tricks work that I was then able to bring that to how I describe my monk character's fighting style and his movements. And I'm able to get much more involved with that.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
So just generally building out the vocabulary.
Yeah. And it makes it a cooler visual experience for everyone.
That's awesome. I absolutely love that. As somebody who did a lot of theater in high school, college, a little bit of community theater and some improv, I feel like I can clock theater people in the TTRPG space from a mile away.
Yeah.
But that's almost never a bad thing. And there's usually a whole lot that skill set really brings to the table and lends itself to, especially in the actual play space. I find it very difficult to, and it's similar to when stories don't have much momentum behind them in actual play shows. If there's not a lot of investment, I can usually tell, and that's usually breaks my suspension of disbelief a bit. But very interesting on the stage combat thing. I wouldn't have guessed that, but that makes so much sense. It's interesting the kind of real-world knowledge that can affect and impact your roleplay in-game. There was a section of our show, pretty late in the show, we had an arc that was centered around the character of the Invisible Man. And Grayson, who played that character, I challenged him because I needed to know for where the story was going and for mechanically what I was going to set up for him. I needed to know the basic gist of how the invisibility procedure that made him the Invisible Man worked. So I tasked him with, if you can come up with just like a basic understanding of how you got here and give that to me, I can then work with this. Doesn't need to hold weight, just needs to sound plausible. And then he took it upon himself to deep dive into scientific research on photoreflectivity, radiation, and there was a certain like biomechanical property of, I don't remember the name of what it was called, but there's a single-celled microorganism that is distinct from bacteria, but is similar to it, that has a photosynthesizing element to it where it consumes and gets energy from light, and then it reflects that light back and uses that as a sort of camouflage.
Oh my God, fuck yeah.
It basically gives off a certain type of radiation that creates that kind of camouflage and illusion. As soon as he dug into all of that, and he just shy of wrote like a college research thesis on how this all worked. And he has pointed out that that actually helped him in his characterization of the Invisible Man from that point of the show on. And it's one of his favorite parts of the show because his understanding of the character shifted once he knew the mechanics of what made him who he was.
Yeah.
So it's fascinating the kinds of things that will give you inspiration and what kind of real world knowledge can positively impact the stories you're telling.
Yeah, definitely. Something similar with that Star Wars 5e game, I've never seen any Star Wars property.
Mm-hmm.
So I purposely made a character who knows nothing about the universe that he's in, because I knew if it got to a point where I had to like pretend to know how the Force works, it would have been just embarrassing. So yeah, I play a monk who was like, I jokingly refer to him as a dumpster baby, was just like found on the streets and was like a street rat with his crew. And I'm just like, yeah, that Jedi shit, y'all figure that out. Sure.
I love that. There's a certain amount of creativity that comes from not having preconceived notions.
Yeah.
I know for myself as a player, when I was first starting off playing in 5e and knew next to nothing about how it worked, my problem solving was I consider a lot more creative than it is now that I understand the system and have notions of what typically works, how things normally go, and have to constantly try to force myself to get back to that unknowing mindset to get that kind of creativity in.
Yeah.
So I know you mentioned a few of the other games that you've played, that you dabbled briefly in Vampire the Masquerade, that your foundation is with 5e. I think you did a stream not that long ago that played in the Kids on Bikes system. What all are some of the systems that you've dealt with, and what aspects of them have really stood out to you as like the highlight of the system?
Ooh, some of my favorite one-shots that I've done on Streaming Rainbow are Bluebeard's Bride, Wickedness, and Quietus. And those are all ones that have that kind of like question mechanic that I was talking about earlier, where it's like you're not building your character with stats, but you're building your character with like story beats.
Mm-hmm.
Like the way Bluebeard's Bride works, you're all playing different emotional facets of one person.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, it's a really cool game. So I was the Animus, which is kind of like the emotional impulse of Bluebeard's Bride. And then the other ones we had were the Witch, the Mother, and the Fatale. And then there's like other ones in the book, but those were the four that we had. So one of the questions I got was, what do the bride's hands look like? And then other people got, what do her eyes look like? What does her hair look like? So we all kind of built a story around like smaller aspects of one person. And then we're able to like build off of each other with that. So I just really like that, like, collaborative storytelling building through questions.
That's fun. And especially with a premise like that, where you are all aspects of the same person, that mm-hmm. is incredibly valuable.
Yeah.
I know similar games that I played like that. I recently played a game of 10 Candles.
Yes, I love 10 Candles.
Yeah, and with that one, because it is so mechanically light, mm-hmm. your character is basically the only thing you've got. Mm-hmm. So
yeah.
with the character building questions, that is similarly very, very critical. I also really like, to a similar effect, for our Halloween special last year, we played a one-shot in the Free League Alien TTRPG.
Oh, I've been wanting to play that, yeah.
And a cool thing that they do with their pre-gen characters, which you can do with your homebrew characters, but one of the things that they do is they have a section for your character to have a specific bond with another character and a specific rivalry with another character.
I love that.
Not everyone's going to have both. Usually everyone will have one or the other, but a few will have both. And that's fantastic for characterization purposes.
Mm-hmm.
Beyond character work, there's also another mechanic that that game has that I really enjoy, which they have a whole stress system.
Yeah.
That game operates primarily by rolling six-sided dice. And when you accumulate stress, you get different colored dice that get added into your pool. You get stress dice where your chances of succeeding on any given roll go up, but so do your chances of failure. The success-failure threshold is basically from your pool of dice. If you roll any of the dice or a six, you succeed. But if a stress dice comes up with a one, then you start to take on stress effects that will negatively punish you and impact you as you go forward. So the more stressed you get, the more likely you are to succeed, but the more likely there are to be consequences for your altered mind state.
Okay, cool. Yeah, that's really awesome.
Yeah, I love stuff like that. I think my all-time favorite thing about Call of Cthulhu when I was playing it is the way that the luck system works. I love the risk-reward trade-off of the luck points.
That's something we didn't use a ton in Esso Sophia. We did use it a little bit in Mythos of War. But what we did more in both of those shows that I do really like is pushing the roll.
Mm-hmm.
I do really enjoy just like, oh, I fucked that up bad, I think, but this is important, so I'm willing to take a bigger risk on that. I really like that aspect. There were so many times where it's like, in Mythos especially, where I asked David, like, is this a roll that I should push? And he would just go, please. but yeah, I love that. I love there being like sort of a risk-reward system and then like it either going spectacularly or horribly. That's always really fun.
I love when there is high risk, high reward for taking big swings. I do also like when systems encourage and incentivize experimentation. At the time of this recording, we are just about to release a one-shot that we did in the Kids on Bike system. And I really like the adversity token mechanic that they have, because in the opposite direction, it somewhat cushions the blow of failure in a way that incentivizes you to try things that are less likely to work.
Yeah. One thing that I also love about Kids on Bikes, which that's kind of how Esso Sophia came about. The exact same cast, we played what was meant to be a Kids on Bikes one shot, and then shit got crazy. It had to become a three-part miniseries on SR. But the ability to kind of like give your friends help, that was something that I really loved, because it makes sense, because it's like a bunch of mm-hmm. kids who are up against the world. And it's like, yeah, we would, like, if I see my friends in trouble, I'm going to like throw them a bone.
That's an instinct that a lot of my players had in D&D Dark, just in general. Grayson, who played the Invisible Man, he had the lucky feat and was always trying to petition, can I use my inspiration or can I use my luck points for somebody else's role to help them succeed instead? It was not very often that I would say yes, but it was not always a no. I tried to give them plenty of tools to be able to work around that. There was a homebrew mechanic that we used that is one of like the collective favorite things that we did for that game, which was the homebrew mechanic of Devil's Bargains.
Yeah.
Where if you fail a roll or if an enemy succeeds a roll that you desperately need to go the opposite direction, you can make a petition to the GM to invoke a devil's bargain where then that enemy's success would become a crit fail or your failure would become a crit success. And in exchange, I, the GM, would get a back pocket nat one that I could bank and at any time for any future roll of yours could substitute that nat one for. That was a thing that was kind of slow at first that ramped up to be used a lot. For a similar reason, people would more often use those devil's bargains to help out each other than to help out themselves.
I love shit like that.
So for getting involved in doing these various streaming groups, that started off as a New Year's resolution, and then you kind of threw yourself out there and got involved on Twitter casting calls and the like. For anyone else wanting to get involved in any of those sorts of scenes, what advice would you give them for how to get themselves out there, get involved with these? And is there anything to look out for that, like wisdom, for example, that you might give your past self that you wish you knew earlier?
Yeah. I mean, unfortunately, Twitter sucks now.
Yeah.
But a lot of, I think nearly all of the channels that I've played on, definitely Streaming Rainbow does this. I know Nerds with Dice does this. Girls Runs These Worlds does this. And I believe, I haven't played with Game Master Monday yet, but I am on their Discord. All of these places have Discord servers and have like In Search of Party channels, or like will sometimes post casting calls in those channels. And I think that's one of the best ways to get involved. I've pulled a lot of people I know in real life onto Streaming Rainbow through the Discord. And I really like that because you can also get to know the people you're playing with before you play with them. That was one of the things that made it hard for me early on was, okay, I'm playing this game with people who I met like in the session zero a week ago and haven't spoken to since. So I think Discord and like public community channels like that is like just a great way to talk to people and then feel like it just breaks down that barrier a little bit. So when you actually get into the game, it gets into it faster. In terms of advice for myself, I've been very lucky with the people I found. I like really love everyone at SR. I'm so lucky to get to call them my friends and to get to do the things that I do with them. So I don't really know if I would do anything different, honestly. I found a very good group of people very quickly. I would just like bring it back around to you don't have time to be shy if this is something you want to do.
That really is such fantastic advice. It's a great way to distill down a concept that I've been circling for a lot of the interviews that I've done. And I think it's a really succinct and efficient way to express that thought.
Yeah.
So I do know that there's a fair amount. I don't want to say that there's a ton, probably not as much as when Twitter was in its prime, but I know on Blue Sky, there's a fair amount of TTRPG groups that still hold casting calls in the same manner that they would on Twitter. Those tend to get flooded very, very quickly. So I don't know what the success rate is of somebody on the outside trying to get in, jumping in through those casting calls. But I love the specific shout outs of groups like Streaming Rainbow, Nerds with Dice.
Yeah, I need to get better about using Blue Sky. I was like a Twitter girly for years and then that fell apart. And I guess I just like didn't want to start over.
I don't blame you.
Yeah, I open Blue Sky like once every few months and I need to just like get back into doing that consistently because I do like it there. But yeah, most of my life is taken up by Instagram now.
I'm very bad at social media in general. I don't have the instincts to maintain a regular active presence on any of them. But the little bits that I do check them out, they are still a useful resource. And Blue Sky is a pretty good one. A couple of the people that I've interviewed, I've connected with on Blue Sky. There's a few that I've interviewed from the New Age Geek Network, which they've similarly got a Discord that is public that anybody can join and that they are frequently putting out calls for players.
Cool.
So that largely comes to the end of the questions that I had. I do want to ask if you've got any other projects that are currently in the works or that are soon to drop that you can talk about and would like to tease.
Well, Mythos of War Journey Through the Pyrenees just finished dropping on Streaming Rainbow. You don't have to watch SS Sophia in order to understand that show. I would recommend it because some of the characters do cross over, but Mythos of War is one of the things that I'm the most proud of. I consider it to be like a very unique AP. I mean, I will say, like, mind those content warnings. It takes place during World War II. Mm-hmm. We do get very intense with it. But David is an excellent keeper and does a really good job at not, like, just going into misery porn territory and, like, really taking care of everyone. But that show was just so cool because I got to talk about being Jewish in a way that I never thought I would in a TTRPG of all things. So that show really meant a lot to me. And I think it's excellent. So if you want to check that out, I would recommend that. Another Streaming Rainbow project that I am no longer involved with is Eli is running Dante's Inferno campaign.
Ooh,
it's really cool. I was in Canto 1. The way it works is for each Canto, the characters stay the same, but the players change.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah, it's so they're on Canto 3 right now. So we just got our third cast in. I was in the first cast, so it's not a show that I'm in anymore. But if you'd like to see it, it's also a very fun time. And I believe they are still casting for future Cantos. I could be wrong about that. But it's just a super unique premise, and Eli is doing a fantastic job with it. I will happily market anything Streaming Rainbow does. I love those guys. Yeah.
To a similar end for the backlog of shows that you've done, for anyone wanting to check out you and your work specifically, is there any one particular project that you would point people to as the best starting point as a good overall representation for you? I know that with your recent Crit Award nomination, SS Sophia is a big enticing one. Inclusive of that or some of the other projects that you've done, are there any others that you would point to as this is a particularly strong representation of me?
Yeah, I would definitely say SS Sophia, and I am biased. I also think Best Last Summer, the Kids on Bike series I did on Streaming Rainbow is very fun. I did a Curse of the House of Rookwood series on Girls Run These Worlds, which is called Blood Will Out. Blood Will Out is very fun, slightly more lighthearted stuff if you don't want to go like hardcore into the horrors of SS Sophia. And then, yeah, I have a playlist on my YouTube channel called Watch Me Play Tabletop RPGs, which is all of the VODs of games I've done in chronological order. So if you want to see everything I've done, that's there. My YouTube channel is just my name, Julia Labusch, Labusch. I also have some videos of my singing on there. I have an original play on there. I recently released my first audio drama, which is something I'm going to try.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, it was a project for a class I was in college, and I loved it so much that I might start doing that more. And then, yeah, if you want to find stuff I do in the future, I always post about games I'm going to be in on my Instagram, @QueenJulia_11. And as I said, I am on Blue Sky. If you want to bother me on there, maybe I'll get better about posting on there. I believe it's also QueenJulia11, no underscore, or maybe there's an underscore. I don't know. I'll find out.
Well, either way, those links will be in the description for easy following. Before we wrap up, is there any other miscellaneous things that you want to add? Any topics that you want to discuss that we didn't get around to, or anything that you just want to make sure that we hit before we wrap up?
No, I think I'm good. Thank you so much.
Thank you again for chatting with me. Thank all of you for listening. One more time, I'm Danger Dangers, the host and GM of D&D Dark. I've been chatting with Julia Labusch. And this has been Table Talk, and I hope you enjoyed what we brought to the table. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Table Talk, created, hosted, and edited by myself, Danger Dan Jurs, with artwork by Jordan Nelson. Our guest this episode was Julia Labusch. Links to their work can be found in the episode description. If you're interested in being a guest on the show, reach out to us at dndarkpodcast@gmail.com. Our theme song and outro were created by Jeremy Vellucci. Check out more of his works on Instagram @JeremyVellucci_wreckoftime. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next time we have a guest take a seat at the table.
Hello and welcome to Super Stryford Regency Rangers, a comedy action adventure loosely based on Sentai and Sensibility by 9th Level Games and starring some of Stratford's most colorful creatures.
You may call me Adrian Alucard Depeche. If you know what my father did, it could be bad.
Looking matronly with her face hidden behind a fan stands the Kuchisake Ona. Doesn't everyone think she's beautiful.
My name is Sir Gordon Topham Hatt. Pleasure to meet you. I like to make stuff go boom.
My name is Richard Milo Renfield.
He's back.
He's just still like that. Oh, God.
Hi, I'm Jordan, and I play Frederick the Loafer.
Oh, my God. Is this the dude that was like... in that one episode of Sea and Dark?
It is the deepest cut of inside jokes that could be made.
Are you married, miss?
I am not married.
Kuchisake leans immediately to the group, just pulls a quick huddle. We need to get this trollop out of this fucking town.
We go fight?
I meet you at dawn tomorrow morning.
It's... date. Yeah.
I hope to find love like that someday.
She says that I hit her. I did not hit her. It's not bullshit. I did not. And as you're walking, he just keeps following you.
Oh, God. I believe I have made an unfortunate ally.
On his hips are two pistols. On his back are two rifles. And on his chest, a triple barrel shotgun.
Oh, my God.
I will destroy all of you and destroy this town.
D&D Dark presents Super Stratford Regency Rangers, premiering Wednesday, May 27th, only on patreon.com/DandDarkPodcast.